is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by T-Mobile Business Advantage.
I'm Michael Wallace. Early this morning, the Supreme Court temporarily blocked the Trump administration from deporting more alleged Venezuelan gang members using the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. The ACLU had filed an emergency appeal, believing some men being held in Texas were about to be deported. Legal analyst Lori Levinson says the court's move came hours after federal judge James Boasberg declined to block those deportations.
Even though Judge Boasberg is very sympathetic to what the ACLU is trying to accomplish here, which is to put a hold on these deportations under the Alien Enemies Act, especially without hearings, he recognizes that he doesn't have the jurisdiction.
Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen is back from his trip to El Salvador, where he met with Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who was mistakenly deported.
This case is not just about one man. It's about protecting the constitutional rights of everybody who resides in the United States of America.
Yes! Garcia told the senator he has been moved to a second prison where the conditions are better, but he has not been able to communicate with anyone in the outside world. Police are still looking into the motive for Thursday's deadly mass shooting at Florida State University. CBS's Katie Weiss has learned more about the alleged gunman, Phoenix Eichner's past.
We've learned that there was a contentious relationship between his birth mother and his father and stepmother. Lots of legal filings going back and forth between them over many years.
FSU President Richard McCullough spoke at a campus vigil for the victims.
It's the kind of tragedy that shouldn't happen. Not here, not anywhere.
Two people were killed in the shooting. The six who were injured are all expected to recover. The second round of nuclear talks between the U.S. and Iran is underway in Rome. Here's CBS's Elizabeth Palmer.
The world did have such an agreement. Almost 10 years ago, the U.S. itself helped to craft it. In return for sanctions relief, Iran agreed to give up enriching its uranium to near bomb grade. Then in 2018, President Trump pulled out of the deal.
Trump says Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. The NBA playoffs get underway this weekend. CBS Sports HQ analyst John Gonzalez is looking forward to the series between Golden State and Houston.
Steph Curry, the greatest shooter of all time, versus Amen Thompson, this young, dynamic player, one of the best defenders in the league. Dylan Brooks and Jimmy Butler, two guys who are known to get under each other's skin. Draymond Green, always a wild card. And then you have the two head coaches, Ime Udoka and Steve Kerr, who are at the top of their game.
In first round action today, the Pacers host the Bucks, the Clippers are in Denver, the Pistons visit New York, and the Timberwolves take on the Lakers. The Miami Heat and Memphis Grizzlies won last night's play-in games. This is CBS News.
If you're 55 and up, T-Mobile has plans built just for you. Get the savings you want on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/choice55 and start saving today.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Farms and Wisconsin has thousands, Judith Ruiz Branch reports. Researchers at the University of Illinois studied milk production records from 9 Midwest dairy farms. Considering both temperature and humidity when measuring extreme heat, they found farms lose about 1% of milk yield annually because of heat stress, while smaller farms lose closer to 2%. Study co-author Maren Skidmore says when cows are in extreme heat, it can cause increased restlessness and risk of infection and decreased appetite, which reduces milk yield and impacts bottom lines.
To some extent, it's only 1.6%, but if you're really making every dollar from your paycheck count because you're living in a time with high costs, then 1.6% of your paycheck being gone in a given year is meaningful.
The study predicts extreme heat days to be more frequent in years to come and milk yield losses to increase about 30% in the next 25 years. The Midwest tends to have smaller dairy farms compared with other states, with herds ranging from 100 to 200 cows. Researchers say being able to track and compare daily milk yields across a large region with similar climates has never been done before. Skidmore says their findings suggest that larger herds seem to have some level of protection to extreme heat compared with smaller farms, which start to see impacts of heat stress at lower thresholds. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Today, mostly cloudy, highs in the low 50s. Tonight, a low around 40 under mostly cloudy skies. Some showers on Sunday with a high near 48. Showers and rumbles of thunder Sunday night, a low near 43. Showers and thunderstorms are likely on your Monday, 56.
Right now, it's 44.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll review the weekend news. And Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media Sports Director, will be here to talk about changes coming to the WIAA. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our outstanding producer, Mr. Aaron Zummers, on the board.
Hey, this is Aaron, Todd's producer. Thanks for tuning in for this weekend's best of the Todd Albaugh Show. First off, we're going to listen to part of Tuesday's show where Todd had TJ Samanchin, president of Wonder State Coffee, on to talk about the ways that the Trump administration's policies are affecting small businesses and especially coffee. And no, it's not just the tariffs. Give it a listen.
It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. We are downtown Madison, Wisconsin, at the world headquarters. Beautiful, partly sunny day, Mr. Zummers. I'm very excited about this hour and about our next guest. You know
me too.
I know. Very, very excited indeed. He has been on our program before when he was kind enough to be our host in beautiful Viroqua, Wisconsin. Back for me, back in the home part of the state of the Driftless area, the CEO and president of Wonder State Coffee, which is the 2025 Roaster of the Year, Mr. TJ Samanchin, joins us via StreamYard. TJ, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How you doing, Todd?
I am fantastic because for those watching on the stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, people know how much I enjoy Wonder State Coffee. And look what they got me for my birthday this year. A beautiful mug here with the Wonder State logo on it. It is filled with Agua Blanca from Colombia. That's one of my favorites. I buy that a lot. And then this is a love-hate thing, TJ, because their cafe on the square, they sell these amazing, addictive crack. No, it's not crack. It is the salted chocolate chunk cookie, which I cannot get enough of.
Wow. You're getting the full effect there in the studio. That's great.
It really is. So thank you for gearing me up and get me ready for the show today. Let's just start off a little bit. For those that might not have heard our previous shows, tell us a little bit about Wonder State Coffee, how it came about, and where it's located.
Yeah. So we are on our 20th year here in Viroqua. So as you mentioned, we're right in the heart of the Driftless region, close to your hometown. Mm-hmm. And for our first 10 years in business, we were just a wholesale roastery. So we import coffee from around the world, from Africa, Central and South America, directly from small farmers. We're really rooted in supporting farmers. That's at the core of our mission. And the other side of our mission is providing extremely high quality coffee. So that's what we've been doing since 2005. And then in 2015, we opened our first retail location, our first cafe. And we now have three cafes, one right on the Capitol Square in Madison, our flagship store. And then we have one here in our hometown of Viroqua and one up on the shores of Lake Superior in Bayfield, beautiful Bayfield. So we have three cafes now around the state. We sell online. We sell to local and national chains in the upper Midwest. We sell to independent coffee shops. We have some corporate campuses around Madison, some of the larger corporate campuses where the employees can enjoy our coffee at work. We're around the state, around the upper Midwest, and then we sell quite a bit on our website nationally as well.
Yeah, and one of the great things I love about Wonder State is your respect for the farmer. And, you know, I had a stint in coffee. I was honored to have friends in El Salvador. And I talked about that last segment, more the political term. I never thought that my knowledge of El Salvador and the politics of El Salvador would come into play on a show like this, but it has. That's where we're at. But I've spent a lot of time there. And, you know, I was very fortunate because TJ knows this, but if you're in the coffee industry, they talk about, oh, you know, someday you'll get to go to origin, meaning where the coffee is grown. And I was kind of fortunate enough to start my coffee experience there and learn from it. Talk a little bit about at Wonder State Coffee, what that means. Do you visit and talk with farmers and that relationship and why that matters?
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of got my start in coffee a similar way. I was living in Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
And so I was studying issues around sustainable development, and just rural issues in Latin America. Mm. And so I was just living in the coffee lands and got to see firsthand the model of a small farmer coffee cooperative. The town I lived in, there was in Atenas, Costa Rica, there was Coop Atenas, which was a coffee farmer cooperative. And so this was, you know, small farmers who own their land, who own their cooperative, and own their product all the way to the final destination. And the empowerment that brings for rural farmers in Latin America. But, you know, contrary to that, we studied, you know, that, and then the flip side was kind of bananas. And we, you know, for those who know the history of banana republics and just how, like, banana in large multinational corporations have kind of, you know, they control the land, they control the shipping, they control, I mean, back in the day, they controlled the country, right? They planted their politicians, right? So they owned all segments of society. And whereas, you know, these democratically controlled coffee cooperatives really empower small farmers, and they keep those farmers on their land. They you know, empower them. They give them a good return on their product. So those are the farmers that we're really committed to supporting. And, you know, in a lot of countries, and you probably have seen this in El Salvador, even in the coffee sector, there is really intense poverty, that there has been a lot of exploitation of coffee farmers, coffee, you know, the workers, the laborers who work on the farms. And that has been, you know, remnants of colonial power structures that persist till today. So part of, you know, what we work towards is balancing out those power structures, making sure farmers are getting their fair shake. We work directly with them. We travel constantly. Nick, our director of coffee, was just down in Nicaragua, Honduras, and Guatemala, visiting with the farmers, setting up the terms for next year's harvest, you know, our hopes and their hopes, and sharing, you know, what we're all trying to get out of this mutually beneficial trade. And we have these relationships for years and years. So yeah, at the core of our business is really those relationships with the farmers and our commitment to them.
I could talk coffee for 2 hours with TJ here. We're talking to TJ Simanchin, president and CEO of Wonder State Coffee in Wisconsin. But just one more, and then we'll kind of move on to the tariffs and USAID type of things. But just again, to put a fine point on this, TJ, because, you know, we tried to do something similar to what in our little coffee business, what you guys have done very successfully at Wonder State, which was to put the emphasis on the farmer. And ultimately, for the reasons you just stated and more, that requires that you probably are going to have to charge more than, say, hey, a Folgers or whatever. And I'm not here to hate on anybody, but I think it's important for you just to talk a little bit about, there are different levels of coffee, and if you buy low quality coffee, it could taste like crap, especially if it's prepared poorly. But if you buy higher quality coffee, which is oftentimes found in higher elevations in more rural areas, to your point, where the producer doesn't even have a car or truck to get their lot to market on the coast. And so what happens is, and I'll just pick on the big one, and not to say that there aren't good things about it in some ways, but you have a Starbucks will go up way up on the mountain and give that farmer the lowest price for the highest quality of coffee. And so then you have things like Cup of Excellence who allow farmers to have their really good coffee exposed to more buyers, and that gives the power back to the farmer. And so that's why it's important, in my opinion, to buy coffee at a couple of bucks higher from people like Wonder State, because ultimately you're empowering the farmer. Am I wrong about that?
You stated it perfectly. Yeah, you're gonna be our spokesman. That was perfect. Yeah. So how critical it is to, you know, our part of our vision is we love good coffee. You know, we are we just love tasting things. We love the enjoyment of it, the morning cup, and have it be elevated. Really treating it as a specialty beverage.
Yes.
You know, that folks get this, right? Like, we know that sometimes you buy a $10 bottle of wine and sometimes a $30, or right. You buy your microbrewery, you know, brewed beer, and right, that these come with an additional cost because they're higher quality, right? And coffee is in that same realm as a specialty beverage, you know, that it can be elevated. It could be an elevated experience, something that there's just really amazing nuanced flavors in the cup. And to pull that off, the farmers have to work a lot harder and be really intentional. And so we want to be right there with those farmers, especially those farmers who historically haven't had access to the market, haven't had access to the techniques and the post-harvest processing that results in this high quality. We want to work with them and build their capacity so they can keep getting a higher and higher price for their product and keep improving the livelihoods of their families. That's really at the core of this, is, you know, trying to support farmers who are, you know, just trying to improve their lives.
About 2.5 minutes left before our first break, TJ. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, we look at what's happening with the Trump tariffs, and you think, well, that's happening in other places. Tell folks a little bit how this is affecting people in the Main Street Alliance here in Wisconsin, particularly folks like yourselves at Wonder State who deal with commodities.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, wow, it's really brutal. It's brutal. I mean, what's happening for small businesses? I mean, these tariffs are directly hitting us, right? This is who pays for it. It's the businesses who are buying these products from, I mean, literally, I am the guy who pays the tariff. Right. I mean, it is a direct increased cost of business. It's a tax. It's across the board. All of our coffee right now, you know, 2 weeks ago is between 10 and 28% with the reciprocal tariffs. But right now, all of our coffee is going to get hit with a 10% tariff tax.
Wow.
That's just a boom, unexpected increased cost of business. Mm-hmm. I need to go out and find financing for that. I have to pay for that tariff upfront before we sell it to the end consumer, right? I got to come up with that cash. And so that's a scenario of, you know, us who we, our whole product line is from something that we import, something that cannot be grown in any volume in the United States. Between Hawaii and Puerto Rico, the US produces like less than a half of a percent of the world's production. Yeah. There's no way to replace coffee domestically, right? Yeah, it is a product that grows in the tropics, and we have to import it. And so, you know, that's a heavy hit for us. But, you know, I have been hearing stories of other small businesses who are just mom and pop shops who came up with a good idea and they brought a product to market. And where was that only place in the world that product could be produced at a lower volume is China.
Yeah.
Right. And they've set up a relationship with a manufacturer in China. Right. But these are U.S. businesses, U.S. families who are just facing a decimatingly high level of tariffs.
We're talking to TJ Samanchin of Wonder State Coffee. We'll come back and continue our conversation. If you have a question, give us a call at 855-752-4842. As they said one time on SNL, it's coffee talk. Come on back. No big whoop.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Streaming TV is where it's at. It's not about cutting the cord anymore. It's all about your customized TV options. With the best and cheapest high-speed internet and your own TV subscriptions, we've got your dream TV lineup. Between wired and satellite internet and TV, save money and get more internet speed and better TV today by calling the Whole Home Connect.
800-217-9129. 800-217-9129. 800-217-9129.
This message is sponsored by WiskCaregiver.com. People across Wisconsin are enjoying the rewards, stability, and flexibility of a career in healthcare. Why not you? WiskCaregiver.com gets you started. Choose between two great options. Become a CDCP, Certified Direct Care Professional, or a CNA, Certified Nurse Aide. Training is free. Plus, earn a $500 bonus. It's easy to start your new career. Learn more at WiscCaregiver.com.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Thanks for sticking with us on the Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. Here's the rest of Todd's conversation with TJ Samanchin of Wonder State Coffee.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
Welcome back to the Todd Allbaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. They have coffee in Brazil. They also have coffee in Viroqua and in Bayfield and in Madison. Other places as well. We can get it at Wonder State Coffee. The president and CEO of the company, TJ Samanchin, is our guest this half hour. TJ, great to have you along. We were geeking out about coffee over the break. I mean, it's just, I think when you get to somebody, when you talk to somebody else who gets coffee, it's just like you can go on and on because, yeah. And people who never, who don't, haven't had the privilege to be in that position, it's like, what do you get so excited about coffee for? It's like, because it's so cool.
Right. Although, who doesn't? I mean, we all, like 70-some percent of Americans drink coffee daily. Mm-hmm. So once we get on this topic, I think we're actually in good company. I think people love talking about coffee.
No, they do.
It's a common denominator. You know, we all enjoy it.
Yeah, it really is. TJ and Wonder State are part of Main Street Alliance here in Wisconsin, talking a little bit about tariffs. I want to talk about some of the things in the USAID as well. But did I miss anything, TJ? Is there anything that you want to pass on to folks, either about the coffee industry or about small mom and pop businesses in general in Wisconsin on tariffs?
Yeah. I'm really, really concerned about a lot of our fellow small businesses. I think we're going to see if this continues, and again, it's changes day by day, so you don't know, you know, what the administration is going to do. But if it continues right now, we're going to see businesses just go under without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Small businesses are not going to be able, who are dependent on imports and are being required to pay these tariffs up front, they're not going to have the cash, and this is going to put them under. So I'm really, really concerned about that.
And we talked about this when we were up in Viroqua at your cafe up there. I mean, Wonder State's a kind of place. I mean, you're providing health care. You're providing some of these benefits to your employees in small towns and large all across Wisconsin. We hear people say, well, we want employers to take care of our employees. Here's a place in Wonder State that's doing that. So now you're doing that, but now you're also having to pay for this tariff, and you have to make tough choices about how you're going to treat your employees. Ultimately, this is going to get passed on to the consumer if people want the company to keep taking care of their employees.
Yeah. I mean, we can't bear, you know, just a 10% increase on, and we're also, I want to be clear too, we're in a moment where at historically high coffee prices.
Yes.
So this is a multiplier effect of something that has already really hit our industry. We just increased prices. We had to. And this, you know, in a way, this is a win for the farmers.
Right.
That music piece in the break, a lot of coffee in Brazil. Yeah. Well, for the past few years, largely because of climate disruptions, there hasn't been as much coffee in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And that has caused a supply crunch. So the commodity market for coffee is at historic highs.
Right.
So these tariffs are coming on top of that. You know, the market was below $2 a pound. This is commodity, commercial grade coffee, below $2 a pound. And it just peaked over $4. So the tariff is hitting us at 10%, right? If it was at $2, it's a 20-cent per pound tariff. Now it's a 40-cent per pound. I mean, so this is just terrible timing. Yeah.
And we don't have time to necessarily get all into this, but just yes or not, more than yes or no, but make sure I'm correct. Everything you just said, and then put on to that climate change where some of the coffee in some of these places is developing something called coffee rust, and they're having to go to higher altitudes and in some cases relocate farms. And that also is driving up prices, right?
Exactly. It's just harder for farmers to grow coffee for a lot of reasons. Climate change is the driving, but there's also political instability. You mentioned things like USAID. You know, farmers need support in getting their product to market. They need the infrastructure. They need the marketing. You know, and so you need the institutions that can support these farmers in doing that. So it's just getting harder and harder by the day, and that's putting a downward pressure on supply.
About 3.5 minutes left, TJ. Talk about what you just said. USAID. We hear a lot about the tariffs. What's going on there? Talk about the impact that the Trump administration's cuts and basically getting rid of USAID, U.S. Agency for International Development, what that is doing to the coffee industry and around the world.
Yeah, this is such a short-sighted policy. It is so brutal, and to be doing it so fast and furious. So USAID, I honestly don't know of a farmer that we work with that has not in some way benefited from USAID support. And that could be support with technical assistance in the field, support with marketing. USAID has taken coffee professionals and hooked them up with up-and-coming producer groups to help them draw that link of how to market to their coffee to the international market. And these are not huge spends. These are low, you know, this is a couple plane ticket kind of things for professionals to come and share their expertise with farmers that are working hard, try bringing their product to market. And these are in areas of the world that are politically unstable. This is, we're talking about the DRC in Africa and Ethiopia, Colombia, Southern Mexico, places where if there's not stable options for farmers, this is where they get pushed into narco trafficking. Yeah. This is where they get pushed into extremist groups, jihadist groups, potentially in Africa. These are the places where, as the social fabric kind of falls apart, these you know, bad actors can come and prey on them. And I see it. I see it in Colombia. When prices are down, I see that farmers rip out their coffee trees and they put in coca. And as soon as they do that, you're bringing in the bad actors. Those communities then have guns, they have violence, they have all the things that that brings with it. So USAID has provided a platform for stability. It has provided a platform for companies like us to find those farmers and to buy from them. It's not charity. This is just infrastructure support. And this is as critical as like building a road from your port so that you can get your product out, right? I mean, these are, you know, things that we take for granted, that we you know, we have a lot of support here in the US for this, but in other countries, you know, small rural farmers don't have access and know-how of how to get their product to the international market.
TJ Samanchin, Wonder State Coffee, I cannot thank you enough for taking time for us. Very educational. On the bottom of each bag of Wonder State Coffee, it says, stay curious. Which I think is exactly where we need to be right now as a country. And if you want to buy a product that is curious, but also has a social conscience and just is the best coffee around, for my money, Wonder State.
Appreciate it, Todd.
Hey, that appreciate you. Thank you, TJ. Thank you very much from Main Street Alliance.
Up next, Doug Moe about his new book, Saving Hearts and Killing Rats.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
CBS News Brief. The Supreme Court issued an order overnight temporarily blocking the Trump administration from using the Alien Enemies Act to deport more alleged Venezuelan gang members. Legal analyst Lori Levinson says hours earlier, federal judge James Boasberg declined to block those deportations, even though he wanted to.
He recognizes that he doesn't have the jurisdiction.
Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen is back from El Salvador, where he met with a man who was mistakenly deported. He says the case isn't just about Kilmar Abrego Garcia.
We need to bring Mr. Abrego Garcia home to protect his constitutional rights to due process.
Florida State University held a vigil for the two people killed and six injured in Thursday's mass shooting. FSU President Richard McCullough.
It's the kind of tragedy that shouldn't happen. Not here. Not anywhere.
The alleged shooter, FSU student Phoenix Eichner, remains hospitalized after police shot him. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Brewers win at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 5-3 victory over the A's. Milwaukee's third win in a row. Game two of the three-game series is tonight. Chad Patrick on the mound for the Crew against the A's right-hander Luis Severino. NBA, the Bucks' Damian Lillard speaking for the first time since being told the pain in his right leg was due to a blood clot.
It was a little bit scary. You know, I think I've had a couple surgeries in my career. You know, I've had things that I've had to deal with ankle or Achilles, calf, whatever it might be. You know, but those are all things that you go to rehab, you know, you deal with it like that. And then you see you have a blood clot, and obviously that's a thing that can affect your life. One of my closest cousins in 2021 had a blood clot in his calf, and he ended up having a pulmonary embolism and dying. So obviously that's the first thing that comes to mind. You know, I'm just happy to be on the other side of it.
That's the Bucks, Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Today, mostly cloudy, highs in the low 50s. Tonight, a low around 40 under mostly cloudy skies. Some showers on Sunday with a high near 48. Showers and rumbles of thunder Sunday night, a low near 43. Showers and thunderstorms are likely on your Monday, 56.
Right now, it's 44.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While corrosive democracy news from Washington continued this week, state news ranged from good in Delaware and Mississippi, mixed in North Carolina and Pennsylvania, to downright ugly in New Hampshire. Voting Rights Lab reports the Delaware Senate advanced SB 2 and SB 3, constitutional amendments allowing 10 days of early voting and no excuse absentee voting. Legislative versions of both bills passed last year, but the Delaware Supreme Court found that the state constitution didn't enable them. The General Assembly must pass them again next year for them to be adopted. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered Mississippi to redraw state Senate districts for DeSoto County, which it found violated the 1965 Voting Rights Act by diluting a majority black section of the county, according to Mississippi Today. State officials in North Carolina found fewer issues among the 5,000 military and overseas voters than the Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin claimed, but the highly questionable post-election review of voter eligibility continues. Pennsylvania Attorney General Dave Sunday appealed a federal court ruling directing county officials to count otherwise eligible mail-in ballots without a date. The New Hampshire Senate advanced SB 213, which would require voters applying by mail for an absentee ballot to enclose a copy of their birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers, almost certainly disenfranchising otherwise eligible voters. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding. Just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Pat Kreidlow.
On Monday, Laura Bird is back. The author and tireless bookstore promoter helps mark Independent Bookstore Day with ways you can support a local business.
Up North News with Pat Kreidlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Thanks for sticking with us on the Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show for this weekend. Here, Todd talks with Doug Moe, author of a new book, Saving Hearts and Killing Rats. It's very fascinating.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allbaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 34 now past the hour of 1 o'clock on this Friday, TGIF, April 18th, 2025. More fun doing it. That's what we need, Summers. It's Easter week. Go to an egg hunt. Well, tomorrow, because weather on Sunday not supposed to be so great. But just great. I appreciate all the discussion last hour and a half here on that. That's why I do this show. That's why I get excited about doing the show, in large part, because we can have discussions about that. So thanks, everybody. Appreciate that. Another reason I love doing this show is because my sister said this to me about 2 weeks ago. She goes, I think half the reason you do this show is just to talk to people that you want to talk to. I said, yes, yes, you're absolutely right. And one of my favorite people to talk to, he's been on the show before. We're so happy to have him back. He is a great columnist, a great author, a great Madisonian, and he is a part of what makes Wisconsin great, in my opinion. He is Doug Moe, and he has a brand new work out called Saving Hearts and Killing Rats, a fascinating title. Doug Moe, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be here.
It's fantastic to have you here. First of all, just how you been? Last time we talked to you, you are here with Professor Mike Lecrone from UW-Madison on his great book that I've got like one chapter left. I'm savoring it. Moments of Happiness. I know you've been touring a little bit with him. And how's that going?
It's gone really well. I'm happy for Mike. The book just went into its second printing.
Wow.
Actually, which is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And Mike's actually making noise now about doing another book. So
love it. Love it. Hey, anytime
more you guys, moments of happiness.
Anytime you want to come back on that, we're happy to. Let's talk a little bit about your latest work here. Again, Saving Hearts and Killing Rats, as the song says, you had me at hello. Great title. Explain where this comes from, please.
Well, the subtitle is Carl Paul Link and the Discovery of Warfarin. Mm-hmm. And warfarin is a drug that a lot of people know about, but it's twofold. It is both a rat poison, mm-hmm. rodenticide, and a heart medicine, a blood thinner for humans. So I got first onto this when Carl Paul Link's lab at UW-Madison discovered it. In the 1930s, I first got onto it. His son, Tom Link, lives here in Madison, asked me if I'd be interested. At the time, I was writing 5 newspaper columns a week.
So there's that.
But I was, a decade ago, invited not to return to the newspaper business.
And, yes, I remember it well, unfortunately.
Mistake on their part. Right.
I have the honor of being Doug Moe's last interview that did not run. What a huge mistake, in my opinion, was made. But that's another bottle of wine.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I got back to Tom Link, and I proceeded. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful story. I'm a little biased by this point. But it starts in 1933. Link is a roughly 30-year-old young professor at UW, and on a cold February morning, a farmer shows up at the biochem building. It was then the ag building, and he's got a dead cow, a bucket of cow's blood, and some sweet clover hay. his name was Ed Carlson. He was just 21 years old. His cows had been dying. If they rubbed up against barbed wire, for instance, and started to bleed, their blood wouldn't clot. It wouldn't stop. Mm-hmm. And they had some internal bleeding deaths as well. He was terribly frustrated and worried. And he tried to find the ag experiment station and couldn't. Or it was Saturday, I guess, and so maybe they were closed. He found his way to Link's lab. Link, luckily, was there. And, you know, denouement is it launched Link and his grad students on a 7-year, journey to find what it was that was causing these cows to bleed to death. And as it turns out, it was something in their feed. It was when the sweet clover got spoiled, got wet, they ate it. That's the thing that was the hemorrhagic agent that caused them. And Link and his assistants were able to isolate what it was in the sweet clover and recreate it synthetically and turn it into what was the first version, which was called dicumarol. Mm-hmm. And circa 1940 or so, it was patented by Worf here in Madison and used as a human anticoagulant.
I'm only, and Doug was so kind to send me an advanced copy, and I'm ashamed to say I'm only a few pages in so far, but what are the... And you explained it very well, but maybe to some people say, well, I'm not so sure that a book on all this chemical, all this chemist stuff is going to be. But the way that you write everything, but the way you've written this, it's very user-friendly, and it draws you into the narrative of this story.
Well, it helped that I was an English major and am not a scientist by right. any means. So, I had to kind of learn the language a little bit, but I try to write it in a way that it's accessible for everybody. Also really helped, and this is the key, by the fact that Carl Paul Link was a fascinating guy.
Really?
Brilliant, a brilliant scientist, mm-hmm. but also a total iconoclast. Yeah. From everything from his dress, you know, he'd wear capes, little Frank Lloyd Wright in him, almost
say, yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And very much an anti-authoritarian. He sparred with the UW administration. Mm-hmm. He was actually censured by the Board of Regents. And actually, and he loved to point out that in that same meeting that they censured him, they gave him a raise.
So that is fantastic.
You know, so the book is a biography of Link, but the center of it, I guess, the through line, I guess, would be the discovery of warfarin. And of course, warfarin, as I say, it started out as a blood thinner for humans called dicumarol. Maybe 6 or 7 years in, Link had tuberculosis, and he spent a few different times in a sanitarium here in Madison, and the one in roughly the mid 40s, he started reading up about rodenticides, mm-hmm. and it dawned on him that perhaps a stronger version of dicumarol might be used as a rat poison, and indeed, he had his lab graduates start working on that. They came up with a stronger compound, stronger than the dicumarol human anticoagulant, and ended up patenting that as well. And that was called warfarin, which is a combination of WARF, the Wisconsin mm-hmm. Alumni mm-hmm. Research Foundation, and coumarin, which is part of the scientific thing of what makes the anticoagulant actually work. So it's warfarin. And that was patented in the late 40s and became available, I think, as a rat poison circa 1951 or two. Mm-hmm. Really wildly successful, Todd. There were, you know, I found newspaper headlines worldwide about it. It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. No.
And then it also dawned on Link that, you know, maybe a version of this warfarin, stronger than dicumarol, but maybe not as strong as the rat poison, could be used for humans, anticoagulant. Now they faced a large worry was, are people going to want to take something that's also a rat poison?
Right.
it's tweaked a little bit, and they called it warfarin sodium. Mm-hmm. The trade name is now Coumadin. Mm-hmm. But it took a little while, and it was, I think, 1955. Dwight Eisenhower famously had a heart attack while he was still president out in Colorado. And Link and his lab had trademarked warfarin as a human anticoagulant, but it hadn't gotten any real legs yet. And a former UW lab assistant of Link's wrote from Denver to Link, President Eisenhower is taking one of your anticoagulants,
wow.
and it's not dicumarol.
Right.
So all of a sudden, that really put warfarin on the map as something for humans.
What a connection. What a connection. We're talking with Doug Moe, journalist, author, and columnist. His latest book called Saving Hearts and Killing Rats, Carl Paul Link and the Discovery of Warfarin. Doug, a couple of thoughts from both sides of this story. My paternal grandparents were dairy farmers, and so I used a lot of warfarin on the farm to get rid of rats and rodents and that kind of thing. My maternal grandmother, who I talked about earlier in the show, of course, Marge Wallace, who was the first dean of a UW system college at UW Richland, she had longtime heart problems, and she was a longtime taker of Coumadin. And she used to joke around about it and say, well, if anybody's got any rats, I can put a couple of these out, and they can. And she goes, she'd tell people I'm on rat poison. That's what keeps me alive, joke around about it. But I just think how many people have their loved ones with them for how many more years because of this discovery?
Yeah, very true. And Link won what's called the Lasker Award, which is there's a Lasker Foundation. He won it twice. He's one of only a half a dozen people to ever win that twice, and it's widely viewed as a precursor for the Nobel Prize. Now, Link never did win that. There's some thought that it was his flair for controversy that may have prevented him from getting that highest of honors. One of his students, Stanford Moore, went on and won a Nobel. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Carl had studied with Fritz Pregel in Europe as a student, and Prego was a Nobel winner, so he was all around it. But, you know, in the 1950s, Carl, he was faculty advisor for two different student organizations on campus here in Madison that both were very left-leaning, radical to a degree. Mm-hmm. And the UW, again, the Board of Regents kind of came after him for that, but he stood his ground. He famously feuded, too, Todd, mm-hmm. with one with Harry Steenbach, who was famous for figuring out that vitamin D could cure rickets. He was a scientist of Link's stature. Mm-hmm. Another unfortunate feud that Carl had was with one of his grad students, Mark Stahmann, and it had to do with credit for discovering warfarin. And wow. It's one of the one of the more interesting chapters in the book. And in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel review, I think it was in that review, mm-hmm. that the reviewers, and one of the reviewers said that how scientific credit is accredited, how it's given, the give and take. Mm-hmm. It's not always really clear, is one of the more intriguing parts of this story.
I encourage people not only to check out the book, but also this article that Doug mentioned, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, entitled Wisconsin Book of the Month, Saving Hearts and Killing Rats on Scientists Behind Warfarin. It's by Jim Higgins. It's really a great read, very complimentary, well-deserved, I might say, from what I've seen so far. I don't mean, we have about a couple minutes left here before, 3 minutes before the first break. I don't mean to draw politics too much into this and comment as much or little as you want. I just think this, as Mike Lucas likes to say, timely, timely indeed, with all this discussion of our universities right now in this country and the value, this book illustrates the life-saving value that our universities provide.
Of university research.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It more than crossed my mind now that this controversy, which, you know, I'll be honest, I'm definitely on the side of funding university research. I don't even see how that's political.
I know.
You know, I mean, Todd, you know, I did a book with a Republican governor, mm-hmm. Tommy Thompson. And mm-hmm. Tommy was a huge supporter of the university.
Yeah. Secretary of Health and Human Services.
It just made sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I hope that that in a way, stories like this from days past might shed some light on current reasons why we should think really hard about discouraging funding for research.
And yes, it's a great read and entertaining, if I can use the word, the way it's written and informative. But I just think so often in our political discourse, and last hour is probably a good example, we start kind of maybe talking past each other a little bit. People say, you know, well, what do we really get from universities? You know, and there's a lot of stereotypes. But here in this book, Saving Hearts and Killing Rats, Carl Paul Link and the Discovery of Warfarin, we find out exactly what our university system and why I believe the University of Wisconsin, the land-grant university, is one of the finest in the world.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
It's really, really a great read. We're coming up here about a minute or so before the break, and then we'll come back to talk a little bit more about this. But I also want to touch on another book you're working on with a guy that I was honored to get to know, former State Senator Fred Risser. What a guy.
Yeah, and Todd, that book is actually done. We just got the last blurb. You know, you ask right. people to, Tammy Baldwin gave a wonderful salute to the
That's
book.
Great.
So it'll be out in August.
We'll come back, talk more about this. Right now we're talking about Saving Hearts and Killing Rats with Doug Moe right here on a Friday edition of the Todd Allball Show. You're listening across the state of Wisconsin to the Civic Media Radio Network.
A new choice, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, 540 WAUK.
Mark your calendars for heart-pumping, exhilarating action at the 2025 Queen Marinette's Run the River Power Boat Races in Marinette, Wisconsin on June 7th and 8th. The action will be nonstop as these high-octane boats reach speeds of over 105 miles per hour. Located on the Menominee River, you'll be seated up close so you can witness all of the high-adrenaline drama. The races are free and perfect for the entire family. Racing will be fierce with up to 100 powerboats and 18 heats a day. Races kick off on Saturday and Sunday at 12:30 p.m. and run throughout the entire day. It's Queen Marinette's Run the River Powerboat Races, June 7th and 8th. Free for the whole family. You won't want to miss this awesome event. For more information, head to fishonmarinette.com and click on the events page or contact the Marinette Welcome Center at 715-732-4333.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Thanks for sticking with us on the Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show for this weekend. Here we wrap up Todd's conversation with Doug Moe, author of Saving Hearts and Killing Rats.
Welcome back to the Todd Allbaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, where it is 9 before the hour of 2 o'clock. At the top of the hour, ABC or CBS News, depending upon which of our stations across Wisconsin you're listening to. A weather update. Remember, some strong storms. Madison over towards Milwaukee may be rolling through later this afternoon into tonight. Keep it tuned to wherever you get your local weather, because it could get bumpy here on out later into the afternoon. Our great sports reporter Mike Clemens is in with a sports update, and then it's another edition of the Maggie Dawn Show every afternoon from 2 until 4, and then later on from 6 until 8, our friend Pete Schwabe with Nightlight. Always a great way to cap off your week, Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, starting at 6 o'clock. Right now we're talking to a wonderful guy, Doug Moe, author of Saving Hearts and Killing Rats. It's Carl Paul Link and the Discovery of Warfarin. He's a journalist, a columnist, a writer, all-around great guy. Doug Moe, I'm serious about this because there are two people, and Zomers will tell you this, I say it off the air, I say it to our co-executive producer, CP. There are two people that I'm just like, set me up with brandy or whatever you got there and let me listen to them. It's you and John Roach.
Yep.
And I think sometime if you're down this summer, because they just put out the sunburst chairs at the Union, one of my favorite, if not the favorite place of mine in Madison. I'm thinking we do a show at the Union with you and John Roach one afternoon, and we just sit around and talk.
You know, I'm the guy that inflicted Roach on the Madison Magazine reading
really?
Public. I was the editor in 1992, I think it was, when John started his column. And I, you know, he was a friend, and he used to talk a lot at lunch and that sort of thing, talk smart.
Right.
And I'd say, well, you should, you know, stop talking and maybe write some of this stuff. And he did that back page column, and he ended up doing it. Who knew? But he ended up doing it for about 30 years.
It was awesome.
And Yeah, we'll do that.
This summer. All right. At hand here, I want to get to a couple of things. I got about 5 minutes plus here left. One quick, just a note on this, Doug. On the current work that we're talking about, Saving Hearts and Killing Rats, the story of Warfarin at UW-Madison, one of our callers or watchers in L.A. Tom out there says, can I just take rat poison basically as medication? No, the answer is no, but you have a quick story about that.
Yeah, and it's in the book. There was a Navy serviceman who he was despondent, and tried to commit suicide by ingesting Warfarin, the rat poison, and it didn't do him any good, but he didn't die.
Right.
And that was actually one of the springboards for Link to start thinking about, okay, maybe this rat poison in a slightly different form could be used as a human anticoagulant.
Wow.
The other quick one I'll share was when I was writing my newspaper column back in the early 2000s, a book came out by a Yale professor named Joseph Brent. It was a book on Joseph Stalin, the Soviet dictator. And it postulated that warfarin may have been used to kill Stalin.
Really?
Brent did not know even what warfarin was. I ended up interviewing him for the newspaper column. And as he had gotten some classified Russian documents, and he found it kind of a medical history, and he showed it to two doctors at Yale. And asked what does this look like? How did Stalin die? And they said, well, it looks like it was either cerebral hemorrhage or warfarin poisoning.
Wow.
And you know, that hasn't been proved either way. But you know, his generals were getting a little worried about Stalin, and who knows?
And to complete the circle, right? go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, because Brent, in our telephone interview, said, wouldn't it be ironic if one of the biggest rats in history was killed by rat poison?
Exactly. I was saying, it was Stalin's daughters who ended up coming to Wisconsin to live out her life in my home county, Richland County.
I interviewed.
Did you really?
Svetlana. I spent an afternoon with her in her apartment in Richland Center.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there was a documentary film coming out about her. She was very private. Didn't ever give interviews.
Right.
But she got worried about this documentary film, and so she did a preemptive strike and called the State Journal and said, I will give an interview. I want to talk about the film. And I got lucky. I got to go up there and talk to her. And, you know, it was really quite amazing. We ended up really kind of becoming friends of a sort. Mm-hmm. We spoke on the phone a lot after that. But she gave me a quote that the New York Times used as the final line in its obituary when Svetlana died. Wow. She was going by the name Lana Peters when she lived here. But at one point in our conversation, she said, it doesn't matter where I go, you know, India, Great Britain, France, Richland Center, I'll always be a political prisoner of my father's name. And I thought, wow. And apparently, and I used that, of course, in my State Journal column. And like I say, the New York Times lifted it and closed their obit with it.
Incredible. Yeah. Powerful. I mean, almost goosebumps, really. The book is called Saving Hearts and Killing Rats, Carl Paul Link and the Discovery of Warfarin. It is an incredible read so far that I've gotten through it. I encourage. What is you're having a book signing. It comes out on when?
Yeah, May 8th at Mystery to Me in Madison on Monroe Street. It's a wonderful independent bookstore. Stu Levitan is going to be interviewing me, a historian and author. So it should be a fun evening.
Yeah, so May 8th, Mystery to Me Books on Monroe Street here in Monroe. Stop down. I have the pleasure.
In Madison.
I'm on Monroe Street in Madison.
Right.
Thank you. Had the pleasure of meeting Doug Moe and getting to hear a little bit more about this great work. We'll have you back on again and talk about the Risser book coming out.
I'd enjoy that. That one's called Forward for the People.
Forward for the People.
The autobiography of America's longest serving legislator.
I was there when it
64
happened.
Years.
Yeah, it was an incredible mark where he became the longest serving legislator ever.
Fred turns 98 next month.
Love it. We always love having you, Doug Moe. Thank you very much. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, Ty.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Maggie Dawn is next. Whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. Have a blessed and safe Easter weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Take care, everybody.
That's all for this week's Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. As always, if you want to hear the rest of the week's shows, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Earl Ingram.
It's Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show, and I'm dedicating this episode to you, the listeners. Your voices matter, and I want to hear how significantly we influence your lives.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings at 9.
Your Republican Representative Cindy Dacow wants to unconstitutionally raise your utility bills after President Trump promised Wisconsin ratepayers he would cut energy bills in half. Trump's DOJ has already weighed in on ROFR legislation in other states and called out the significant harm it would cause consumers if passed. Call Representative Cindy Dacow at 608-237-9197 and tell her to stand with President Trump and the Constitution by voting no on ROFR, paid for by the Electricity Transmission Competition Coalition.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by T-Mobile Business Advantage.
I'm Michael Wallace. The Supreme Court has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from deporting more immigrants using the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. Scott Lucas is a professor of international politics at University College Dublin.
They didn't say yes or no in terms of whether or not the Trump administration can use this Alien Enemies Act, but they said no migrants, not only from Texas, but no migrants from anywhere across the United States can be deported until the federal appeals court makes its determination. So they effectively put the case back to the federal appeals court and issued a temporary stay on any deportations until we get that ruling on the merits of the case.
Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen is back from El Salvador, where he met with Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who was mistakenly deported.
Depriving Kilmar of his constitutional rights is a threat to everybody who resides in America. He had not heard that. I believe that gave him additional strength.
Abrego Garcia has been moved from the notorious CECOT prison to a nearby detention center, Van Hollen said, but has never been told why he's being held. The Department of Justice has acknowledged Abrego Garcia was deported by mistake after a prior court order prohibited his being sent to El Salvador, a nation he fled about 15 years ago.
CBS's Scott McFarland. The U.S. and Iran are holding their second round of nuclear talks in Rome today. President Trump has threatened military action if diplomacy doesn't work.
I'm for stopping Iran, very simply, from having a nuclear weapon. They can't have a nuclear weapon. I want Iran to be great and prosperous and terrific.
Iran wants the U.S. to lift its sanctions. The Oklahoma City bombing was 30 years ago today. 168 people were killed. KWTV anchor Robin Marsh.
Evil will not prevail. What was meant for evil will be turned to good. And that embodies what Oklahoma City is today doing and will continue to do in the future.
Former President Bill Clinton is addressing this morning's ceremony in Oklahoma City. Florida State University held a vigil for the victims of Thursday's mass shooting.
At this point, there does not appear to be any connection at all between the shooter and any of the victims.
Classes were canceled Friday.
We're going to let a few people in at a time.
Though some students returned to the campus to retrieve their belongings left behind during the shooting.
It's definitely really sad, but seeing the community come together and like put down flowers and just really reflect on loved ones and what we really need to appreciate and be grateful for.
A memorial on the FSU campus keeps growing. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
Those killed were 45-year-old campus vendor Taru Chaba and 57-year-old dining services employee Ricardo Morales.